Welcome to the latest episode of Disorderly Blondes. This is Brenda.
And I'm Christy. Today we have Lisa Puglis LaCroix, yes, founder and CEO of the local nonprofit Love Serving Autism. Now, Lisa, thanks for joining us, but full disclosure, whenever Brett and I hear the words love and serve in the same sentence, it's usually in response to a round of alcoholic beverages served by a cute cabana boy. But we know this is a different type of therapy, and that's tennis instruction for individuals on the spectrum. Welcome.
Thank you for inviting me today, both of you. I appreciate it. I'm excited to be here.
We're excited too.
Your blonde roots are in professional tennis, and you have been treating children with autism for almost 2 decades. Love Serving Autism must have been born out of your love of the game of tennis and the benefits you feel it offers those on the spectrum. Tell us your story.
Wow, well, I do have quite the story.
We have 40 minutes with, we only have 40 minutes with stupid Zoom, but.
Okay, I know Zoom will cut us off.
I'm kidding. We could always be sign in.
So I did, as a child, I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee. At the age of 5, I learned how to play tennis. Just randomly, my mom couldn't make her tennis lesson at the racquet club. So I just said, my mom signed me up. And I became really into tennis. I loved it. I used to tell my parents, I just went to hit on the wall at home as a child. And they painted their garage like the French Open. As a French Open. So and there are people in the tennis line, and I would just play, hours and hours as a child, and I just loved it growing up. And I thought, wow, I like this more than soccer and piano for whatever reason. And just started, entering into tournaments when I was young, at the age of probably around 8 or 9. And we ended up moving to South Florida for my dad's job when I was in high school. So I competed competitively in junior tennis in Memphis, and then moved to South Florida. And Florida tennis is a lot higher level, very competitive as a junior. Thankfully, I had great coaches, and ended up, doing well in Florida tennis and juniors, and continued on the path. Went to high school at St. Andrews in Boca Raton, and we had a strong tennis team there. We won states, and everyone was eventually pretty much top ranked in the state at the time. So we had a great team, and my focus was on academics and tennis, and that was it. And I didn't really socialize. I was quite shy. So being an introvert and into tennis, I just kind of did my own thing, and ended up playing national tournaments, and I was one of the top in the country and growing up in the 14, 16, and 18 and under. So I thought, well, probably end up going professional, because that's usually what you do when your life is a sport and you love it. And I had very supportive parents. So that's basically it. I applied, decided whether I wanted to go to college or go professional. And being a St. Andrews student and academics were so important, I thought, I'd like to go to college first, give college a try, and see what happens with tennis afterwards. So started Duke University my freshman year in 1992, and played on the tennis team, and beautiful school, but became a little homesick, so missed Florida a lot. Called my parents, one of those awkward moments of, I'm calling you because I think I'm coming home and I'm going to be back in Florida. So I ended up transferring to University of Florida and played. So go Gators. So I played there for 3 years, graduated. And our team, I'm still close with the girls now. We won NCAAs my senior year. So most of the team members did go pro, which was kind of a cool thing. So I did. I after college and the whole transition, I ended up, so my life is tennis, and that's all I knew. Didn't really have much of a social life, but that was okay. And played tennis for a few years, playing tournaments, some professional tournaments a little bit here and there, and had kind of a spinal stenosis in my back, which is not fun, but I was questioning at that time, and I wanted to be open about this, kind of my bigger purpose of like, what's my life about? And is tennis my life? And is this what I want for the rest of my life? And I was in my early 20s when all this happened. But I did have back surgery, but I figured out that, I'm going to take a little break from tennis. And I actually applied to graduate school and went on the speech pathology route. So I kind of switched identities in my 20s, and tennis was all I knew. I mean, all the people I knew in my life, and I thought, wow, it'd be really great to go into a career when it wasn't so focused on myself. You know, maybe I could reach out to others, make a difference. And I fell in love with the speech pathology career. Went to FAU, by the way. Would you like me to keep going or do I stop?
Yeah, go ahead. We're good.
Okay. So basically went to FAU for a four-year program, graduated, and became an SLP. And the only reason I was connected to autism was my very first job interview was for a self-contained ASD unit at the Wellington Landings Middle School for the school district of Palm Beach County. And I thought, wow, what an amazing group of children. You know, they looked like so much fun, you know, and it was something that I'd never experienced before. So I went back to the principal and I said, you know, I think I'm going to take this job because I like the challenge of it. I like that these children are all unique and different. And meanwhile, you know, I wasn't thinking about tennis anymore. I was done. So went into the classroom and basically loved it. I was at Wellington Landings for 10 years as an SLP and worked in all of the self-contained ASD units. And at that time, 10 years into it, I thought, you know, I still didn't really miss tennis that much, but I kind of did a little, but I really loved being an SLP. And I had heard about, you know, a charter school, the Palm Beach School for Autism, because I knew Ann Levine Eisenberg quite well. So I used to work, actually her son, I treated her son. He was in my program for speech therapy in middle school, Alex. So I was his SLP. So I spoke to Ann and I said, you know, your school is for children with autism. And I think that's what I really want to do forever. So she hired me and I worked at Palm Beach School for Autism for 5 years as an SLP. So I worked in the pre-K, then I went to high school, middle school. I kind of went all around and, you know, it was a very intensive experience, but it was my passion walking into the school and knowing that this is what I love to do. And we had a great support team of SLPs there. So I'll keep going if you don't mind. Okay.
And you worked for another nonprofit, tennis nonprofit, autism organization before you started Love Serving Autism,
yes.
Correct?
Yes. Okay. So right at that point, when I was at the Palm Beach School for Autism, I read in a magazine about a nonprofit, a national nonprofit based in LA. And I reached out to the founder. I said, you teach tennis for children with autism. And he said, you know, Lisa, do you remember me? You know, we met when you were younger in South Florida in tennis. And it turned out that he did go to FAU, the founder. And we did know each other. So he said, what are your thoughts on you helping me open the programs in Florida? Because in Florida, there were no programs at the time. The program's called Acing Autism. So I said, sure, you know, I'll work with you on opening programs in Florida. So 6 years I did this and I loved it. I collaborated with the organization from, you know, they're in California, I'm in Florida. And, you know, it became such a passion that everyone thought this was my organization.
You're like, thanks.
Yeah. And they thought, oh yeah, you're the founder of Acing Autism. I said, no, actually I'm not the founder. I'm the Florida director, but the founder is, you know, and his wife are in LA. So, you know, 6 years into it, being an SLP and growing up in tennis, I saw some new avenues and new ways of teaching the program that weren't initially, you know, established within Acing Autism. And so I did reach out to the founder and I said, you know, I have these visions and ideas. And I think he thought I was like, okay, here she goes, you know, she has a lot of ideas, but you know, at the time, I don't think they were ready to branch out in that direction. And I felt that it was time for me to learn on my own, you know, how do you run a nonprofit and how am I up for this challenge, you know, doing this on my own from starting over from scratch completely, you know, creating my own curriculum for tennis and adding communication and life skill components and all that. So I did. So January 2017, you know, the Palm Beach School for Autism and Ann said yes to starting a program at their school. And that was our first Love Serving Autism class was in January 2017.
Did it feel good to go your own way, to do your own thing your way?
It did, and I felt like I felt empowered by it, and I also felt a little overwhelmed because I didn't realize what was entailed. Like I had only been, like I said, a program director, you know, for another organization. So I didn't know the ins and outs of like the administrative and a 501c3 and applying to the IRS and sure. all of the grant writing and everything entailed. Like I was not trained for that. So I kind of had to learn on my own.
That's so awesome. Well, you're a smart cookie.
Thank you. So Anne was great. And like I said, I was able to, the opportunity, she said, well, sure. If you want to start Love Serving Autism here, go ahead. Here's your platform. You know, you can do it outside at the playground or at our basketball, we have a basketball court. And I actually was able to get lines painted for a tennis court. So we had that. And I loved it. I mean, and the one program kind of began to branch out. I did reach out to the L's for Autism Foundation, you know, and I said, you know, what are your thoughts on starting a tennis program? They may have already kind of had it in mind. I don't know at the time, but kind of met them, the foundation director, and they said, sure, let's get this started. So I was at Ernie L's for 2 years and taught the tennis. And, you know, it was a great experience meeting all the families in Jupiter. And a lot of the same children log into our, well, now we're during COVID, we have Zoom, which I'll explain, but you know, right. the families still stay connected. You know, so I'm really appreciative for a lot of the foundations and the experiences I've had. You know, and again, some like, you know, due to branding and some things, they have to keep their program within their program. And I understand. And, you know, so what were you going to ask?
Well, speaking of the awesome kids and awesome families, yes. Jupiter and everywhere yes. else.
And your
is
son.
Something about tennis that those with autism and other developmental issues are drawn to. What is your hook with them?
Well, I'd have to say, in being myself a very visual person, I'd have to say that would be, even growing up as a child, you know, I don't have a diagnosis of autism. I understand that, but I do kind of understand how they feel on a tennis court, because when you get out there and you connect with the ball, and it's kinesthetic. So, you know, you hold your racket, they hit the ball, and it can regulate their sensory system. Also, it's very visual in nature, as you know, and it's repetitive. So I think that even hitting on a wall, you know, I see children hitting on walls, on ball machines, you know, it's just that feeling of the ball coming back and forth. I think the children and adults on the spectrum are inclined that way. You know, they connect to it. It's a bit of obsessive compulsiveness, you know, where you can, everyone, I have it, and everyone can perseverate a little bit on something like a passion. And, you know, the challenge with autism though, with that level of intensity, can be perfectionism. So some of the children, you know, if they miss a shot or a ball, you know, they have to go and pick up that ball and bring it back, because, you know, they don't like to make mistakes. They want to do it right all the time. Right. So we do see that the level of you know, this going on in our programs. But anyway, we do in the classes, I don't know if you're going to ask me this question eventually, but we do have a wide range of children and adults who are verbal, nonverbal. Some have communication devices, some do not. So we just recently created a website. USTA Florida is U.S. Tennis Association as a Florida division. And thankfully they're partnering with us for the next 3 years. So as an adaptive program with Special Olympics Florida. So they created a web page on their site for adaptive resources for our organization. So a program director can log in, and there's communication visuals that we've created, you know, to request and comment and protest for the program participants who don't have devices, you know, or don't have the ability to communicate.
Sure, sure. And the students that require the most help, what strategies are you able to use with a child who maybe is nonverbal, has some physical challenges or behavior mm-hmm. issues?
Well, typically we have a ratio of, you know, one volunteer for every three children. But like, for instance, at the L's for Autism program or Palm Beach School for Autism, some of the chartered schools, a student may have a behavior therapist with them, or they may have a respite since it's after school, working one-on-one directly with that student, because, you know, they might require physical prompting where, you know, there's, you know, the different levels of prompting, where it's verbal, physical. So the coach may say, okay, now everyone stand on your purple dot, you know, your poly spot on a court, and now we're hitting volleys. Well, that child may need physical assistance to get to that spot, right? So, and others may not. So, you know, a volunteer or that one-on-one person might guide them to the spot. So it's initially, it's a lot of hand-over-hand physical prompting. We try to fade the prompts, you know, to where it's specifically verbal and gestural, but some of the individuals do need consistent physical prompting to participate, and others become quite independent, where once they know, you know, the routine, you know, say they're in the sessions, you know, once a week for 6 weeks, you know, by the second round, they may already know what to expect. Yeah. Perfect. So as long as we keep it consistent, that's super important.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
What are some of the long-term benefits that parents or that you can report of someone doing this for a long time? I know as a parent of a child on the spectrum, I'm excited that he would probably be tired. Yeah.
Right.
Too tired to swim, too tired to cry, too tired for anything. Yay, tennis. But what else?
Well, you know, there have been reports from parents who say that their child is happier. They feel like they're more inclined socially because they made friends in tennis. So there increases their social skills. And also, I have to say, one student actually lost, I think, 40 pounds in tennis from, you know, he had never played a sport before and he was only into video games. He's in high school. And I kind of met the mom one day at one of the schools and said, you know, hey, would you like to sign her for tennis and sign your son for tennis? And she said, tennis? He doesn't play any sports. But he went, and I think he felt comfortable because he was making new friends. And then all of a sudden, he was interested in the tennis. So that's something, too, the benefits of your health, you know, for the therapeutic, not only for communication skills, but also for health and fitness. And one of my bigger goals with Love Serving Autism is to partner with a therapy company, because I would like to have SLPs, occupational and physical therapists, out in tennis working on those skills. Of, you know, fine motor, how to hold a racket, because what we learn in tennis, we want to generalize, you know, into our job someday and our homes and community. So we're kind of at the beginning phases of that.
Love it. That's, and maybe an ABA therapist for the behavior piece.
Right? Absolutely. Absolutely.
Experience.
Yeah.
The need for behavior.
Right. Okay. Right. And in a way to, you know, another goal is to be able to track that data on how are these children progressing with their language skills and, you know, like you said, behavioral, and do you see decreases in behavior? I have had also reports of that as well, where, like you said, you know, tennis is hot in Florida and you expend a lot of energy. So by the time they get home, you know, they're a little more calm and they're not as, you know, if they do stimming or anything, you know, maybe that's decreased, you know, so there are a lot of benefits to tennis, I think, you know, for this population, but I just don't know if all the parents are willing to try. I think that's one of my goals too, is to, like,
I'm guilty of that.
Okay. So to believe that their child would even like it, or how would they even connect to it? You know, it's something that I'd love to do a better job in portraying to families.
And that's why we're here, to
good.
tell everyone about all the awesome things you're doing. And so if I am a parent, my question is going to be, tell me what a typical session would be like. Are you grouping my child with, is it like by age or by skill level, or tell me, is it free for all? Do I get to go to the mall while you're doing this? All the things these parents
I know most parents would like to go to the mall, but
or the bar.
Or right. Well, it kind of depends on the location. So for instance, at a charter school, most of the children go outside, they go outside the school building and they're at tennis. So the parents are not there. And in those situations, we usually have support staff from the school come out, or we also provide our own volunteer staff. know, to work with the kids. So I think in those situations, it's as far as the ages and how we divide all the classes, at a charter school, it might be a larger number of kids coming out. Say we have 15 children register. We either have two options. One is, if it's a large school or we have a playground and tennis court area, we break them into smaller groups based on more age, somewhat age, because you don't really want a 5-year-old at times with an 18-year-old, right? But also it's somewhat developmental. So it's a mix because tennis nowadays, which I did not have this experience, has different color tennis balls for children. So instead of yellow ball, now they have red and then orange and green. So there's different levels of tennis.
That actually makes sense to me.
So red ball is,
I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, red ball is bigger and they're pressureless tennis balls. The USTA created this system. So it's kind of errorless. So 80% of our programs are red ball, meaning they're beginner classes. It's like intro to tennis. And even if a child hit a ball and it hit a volunteer, it's soft. It's like a foam ball.
Okay.
It
sounds like the equipment that JR uses at golf.
Yes. Yes.
Why is the name of the golf program escaping me? Because I have game on the first tee. I have game on in my head, but
that's okay.
Right. And he looks ridiculous because he's a big grown kid and he's got like this club that's like as big as his head. And even Ernie's like, I think I'm going to bring you some clubs, JR. But well, it makes sense.
I think maybe you're right with this because parents see tennis on TV and it's this whizzing tennis ball and it's fast and it's yellow. Yes. But if they knew there are different levels of tennis balls now, and any child, and which is great for adaptive tennis for special needs, because now these tennis balls are errorless in a way where even if, you know, it's a lot harder to miss, you know, and even if you swing and hit a ball and it hits like a volunteer, you know, they don't get knocked out, right? It's like they can easily recover.
Yeah.
So as far as the classes, whether it's a charter school, like a public tennis center on a Saturday, parents would go and they would bring their child to a public facility, like in Boca Raton, Patrick Park. It's a big tennis facility and we have programs on Saturdays. So we might have a 10 and under class at 10 o'clock and then an 11 and older class at, you know, 11 o'clock. And parents stay at that time. It's like a great support group because they're not on court with us, but they're kind of congregating together, keep an eye on their child. But, you know, we run the classes and the program directors run the classes, but they're there if there is a behavior that is concerning and they might need to step in for a minute, you know. But in those cases, most of the time they do have a behavior, a one-on-one with them, whether it's a behavior therapist, ABA, whatever, like with them on the tennis court. So it is developmental. It's not necessarily always based on age, but it's a little, like I said, it's, you know, we do have 7-year-olds at the same tennis level as an 18-year-olds, but they look kind of funny together, you know, like on the same tennis court.
Right, right.
That's what Dylan would be. He's 18, my oldest, and he would be with the little ones. So
right, but they
think nothing
but
of it.
They function fine. Like they don't they're not even like aware 100%. Like they don't really mind.
They're not.
Right.
Mm. They're not.
Yeah. So go ahead.
Well, we love that siblings have the opportunity to get involved as well. Tell us about that. Are they encouraged to volunteer, help out?
Well, thank you for asking. Initially, when I started Love Serving Autism, I wasn't really thinking 100% about the sibling component. But I quickly realized that when we started a program, for instance, in Boca, I would see siblings come to tennis and they'd sit in chairs with their parents and watch their brother or sister play. And I could see some of the frustration on their faces or kind of like, I'm kind of left out. You know, my brother or sister gets to play tennis and I have to sit and watch.
Right.
So I quickly realized like, wow, we need to engage the volunteers and siblings 100%. So at that point, I invited them onto the tennis court, whether they're picking up tennis balls, whether they're tossing the balls to the kids, whether they're supporting their brother or sister at times. Sometimes they like to be with their brother or sister on the court and providing the modeling and guidance they need because they know them so well.
Right.
And other siblings may not want to be part of the program, and I respect that too, because they like their own, you know, they like their own time. So it's kind of a mix, but, you know, for the most part, I see siblings, they're so happy once they're invited, you know, once they're included. Even for our fundraisers, like we have fundraisers before COVID, we were scheduled for a few, and, you know, we have fundraisers where we come out and siblings, you know, could join, you know, and be a part of it, because they're in the family. Their sister has autism, I understand, but they're still essential in the family, you know, and they need support as well.
Mm-hmm. I know my 13-year-old says, JR gets to do all these cool things. And I want to say, like, really? But really, I mean, it's just because it's adaptive or just because it's for people with autism doesn't mean it isn't fun, doesn't mean it isn't engaging. And everyone's so positive. And so that would be something that my 13-year-old would dig, maybe, depending on the day.
Okay.
And he's talking to me that day.
And we do provide community service credits, you know, hours for volunteering. And also, interestingly, I had a phone call from California a few months ago from a student who actually started an organization for tennis. It's a student-owned organization, and his brother is on the spectrum. And he said, you know what, I want to make a difference. So he started his own nonprofit with his mom, and now it's like run by high school students. Yeah. And this is in California. So you see different levels like that of commitment where, you know, the siblings want to connect, but they don't often know how. And at what, and they do sometimes feel left out, right? So we want to make sure that they feel empowered and a part of everything, and you know, make it fun for them too, since so much focus a lot of times on therapies and everything is on their brother or sister.
Yeah. Right? So sometimes siblings have a hard time coming together, doing the same thing, playing the same sport. So if that sibling can, you know, then say to the other sibling, hey, let's pick up a ball when we get home, and that's, you know, beneficial to the both of them. So I love the sibling piece. I'm sorry. That's just my thing.
Right. And anytime you have extra ideas for me, please, because I find it, even being an SLP, and I used to work in the homes too, doing private therapy, you know, I'd see siblings walk out, and some of these children were, you know, they had behaviors, and, mm-hmm. you know, it's almost like the siblings in one part of the house with the door locked, you know, or shut, because they don't want to hear the noise or be part of it. And you kind of say hi to them, but then they retreat, you know, so it's like, you know, they're in the world, but they're kind of at times disconnected from it. So
100%.
Mm-hmm. So
it looks like in July you adapted your adaptive tennis program in light of everything going on with COVID. How is the virtual program going?
Thank you. It's been a journey. I did not envision ever teaching tennis on Zoom. I never really was not in my thinking at all, which is kind of exciting in a way that it's a new platform for us. So that was the benefit of COVID, because in March we had to postpone all of our programming and fundraisers. And so I'd say mid-April we kind of devised a plan. So I took the lesson plan that we're teaching on court and modified it for the home. And kind of said, well, let's get going with this and create Zoom links and get it out there. And there's an organization called YotMe, YOTME, and they're a friend of mine's husband created it. So it's like an event platform where it's like an online ticketing platform, kind of like Eventbrite, but they've been a host for all of our virtual tennis classes. Mm-hmm. So they created the marketing for us, and they create the Zoom links for us, and the families download the app basically, and then they log in and they sign up for all these classes. So the tennis has been great. There's been pros and cons to it. I think initially we had a big interest. We had around 40 children signing up and doing it, you know, online. It's once a week on Saturdays it started. Then I realized, okay, everything I'm doing, you know, we log in, we say hi, we do our greetings, you know, I kind of unmute kids and they get to say something, or we work on a character development trait for the day, like listening skills, sportsmanship, and then we get into our physical fitness, you know, and then we do our hand-eye coordination drills. So most of the kids have a racket, or if they don't, they use a dustpan, whatever they have in the home to simulate a racket.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Not sweet.
And then they have, if they don't have a ball, you know, they've used balloons. So the parents have been really creative. And they just imitate what I'm doing on the screen. So we practice our volleys, you know, we practice hand-eye coordination, and it takes about 45 minutes. Then I noticed, like a month into it, there's a lot of different levels of students logging in with tennis and communication. So I decided to create an additional class on Sunday for the students who are a little more advanced in tennis. So, which they're like green ball level, not red and yellow, red and orange, but green. And they, if you put them on a tennis court, they might be able to rally a little bit, you know? So these more advanced students log in on Sundays, and we teach a little bit more faster pace, like an advanced class. So that's kind of how we coordinated the Zoom. And then we introduced yoga like 2 months ago. So a yoga instructor logs in twice a month and teaches yoga, and they love it.
Sounds great.
Dylan loves yoga.
And they did also a glow in the dark. We did something, and it was on the news. We did like this fun glow in the dark tennis event where we partner with a tennis company who does glow in the dark tennis events. And they use like, basically the kids ordered items off of Amazon, black lights. And then they, you know, on a Friday in May, everyone shut off their lights, turn on their black lights. And then we had a coach teach, and it was all virtual, but it was all glow in the dark. With music.
Have fun.
So we're trying to be innovative because it can get logging in every week. As you know, being on these Zoom calls can be quite like redundant and repetitive. And yeah. I think there's a little burnout at this point. At some level, the kids want to get outside.
Yeah.
After all these months. So we did reopen one program 3 weeks ago just to pilot it with our new COVID protocol in Green Acres. The city of Green Acres, and we have 5 children. 8 a.m. is 5 children, 9 a.m. is 5 children, and we're just kind of testing back to see how we can reopen again for all of our programs.
Now, can I ask you, I know you're like, you're here, you're there. I feel like you're really getting around in Florida. Does Love Serving Autism have chapters throughout Florida, or is that your ultimate goal? I know I see Tampa, Green Acres,
Boca. So that's a great question.
Broward.
Yeah, well,
Frank Veltri.
So we are reopening our Frank Veltri program in November in Plantation, which is a beautiful tennis center. But as far as chapters, USTA Florida, since they partner with us, and one of our partnership agreements is that they would like to reach 800. I think the number is 800 children and adults with autism in the next 3 years to teach tennis to. So it's throughout Florida. So, you know, started in Palm Beach County, and we have so many schools here and opportunities that I could probably do this forever, but the level of expansion is kind of, you know, at the point where, you know, it's available for us. And like, I just was on a call right before meeting with you guys in Pensacola. We're going to open a program there in November. Wow. So it is expanding, and it's a little challenging because I am one person and I can't always get everywhere to do the training. So we did create a YouTube channel with some training videos on how would a tennis professional learn how to do this? You know, how would they be able to contact me and say, you know, I want to run this program at our facility? Because it's not easy always getting to all the facilities and doing the trainings, especially now, you know, with COVID. So that is our goal, is expansion through Florida. We did have a trip to the U.S. Open in 2019. We brought 21 children from Palm Beach County in Broward. Actually, one from Broward, I think, in Palm Beach County. And we flew to New York. Not all the same flight, but all different flights.
Wow.
The U.S. Tennis Association invited two organizations for special needs to participate. They gave us a tennis, they gave us one of the stadium courts, and it was a 10-minute on-court demonstration of our program. And it was such a whirlwind because we fundraised for 3 months, you know, and got there, and the kids, it was 10 minutes, but they loved it. But it was additional exposure for us because, you know, we've had interest in New York and, you know, a few other locations, but, you know, it's on the radar. I just have so much to do here right now that I want to make sure that everything is, you know, all the essentials and all the fundamentals are there before we, progress out of state. Because I think that there's a need for it, and there definitely is.
We'll just clone you.
Oh, thanks. Okay. The exciting other news I wanted to share with you guys is in tennis, sort of like being a speech pathologist, you know, they have like a certification organization where you're certified with something, right? So in tennis, you're certified with the two organizations, the U.S. Pro Tennis Association and Professional Tennis Registry. So all the on-court teaching professionals are certified by these two organizations, and they created a committee, and I'm kind of leading this committee on adaptive tennis and how to get tennis professionals certified across the U.S. Wow. In teaching, and how do we create curriculum. So there's like, the exciting news is that there are big projects ahead in the tennis industry, not just in our organization, but, you know, in the tennis industry in general. There's a lot of interest from tennis professionals on how can we volunteer at a program? How can we meet a child with special needs and learn to make a difference? Because they're working all day on teaching lessons all day on the courts or playing professional, and they don't really have time, a lot of times, to do this. Or the training, a lot of times it's training too.
Super exciting. Wow.
So it's kind of like a big project that I'm assisting with, and it's about diversity and inclusion, you know, about like inclusion and how do we get these children into the communities so that they feel they're a part of everything. So
very
cool. Yeah. It's exciting.
I'm saying one more thing for our kids to be included in. So check.
Yeah. Right. Like in the Delray, have you heard of the Delray Beach Open or the Miami Open, the tennis tournaments?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know have you been to them?
Well, I haven't been. No.
Okay. They both do an incredible job, just like the U.S. Open did. You know, some of these bigger professional tournaments are now hosting clinics. So we'll host a tennis clinic at their tournament. And the children are all invited to go to the tournament and play on the grounds at the tournament. And then they get to stay after and they get to watch tennis, you know, or they get to work at the hospitality tent and greet the guests as they walk in. So it's kind of neat because it's inclusive, meaning that they're going into this tournament experience and, you know, they're getting to understand like, oh, this is what a tournament's like. This is what like professionals do, you know?
Love it.
Which is pretty neat, you know, but it's like you said, I am ambitious and I'm one person, but on the other side, you know, fundraising, because we don't have like a big name maybe yet, whatever. I mean, we're growing. Only 3.5 years old, but you know, fundraising is something I'm still learning about, and also grants and how, you know, I'm still not even part-time. I mean, I'm sort of part-time, but not really. Like, I'm still waiting for that moment of like, I want to do this full-time, but we're still building it. So, you know, I'm learning.
That's part of my next question. We love seeing how you've partnered with national organizations and many local businesses. How does this help keep the cost down? And what is the cost to families who want to participate?
Thank you for asking. Our goal, I would love to make, you know, I would love to provide scholarships to everyone. And I don't think there's an exorbitant fee. I mean, it's $10 or $15 per class for the hour. Mm-hmm. So it's not like a typical tennis lesson. But there are families who struggle with paying, you know, for a 6-week session, $60, you know, there are challenges with some of the families, and I respect that. So some of the ways that we do, you know, provide scholarships is, you know, through grants, you know, through partnerships. But again, I think COVID, and I mean to talk about it in a negative light, but it has been challenging because there's so many nonprofits applying for these COVID grants. That it's much more competitive right now than it previously was. So I think that I've had a little bit of time through COVID to meet a lot of great nonprofit consultants and individuals who are professionals in nonprofit worlds, because I never was, like, I didn't have that training. So thankfully I have a few in the last few weeks who've been reaching out saying, you know, I'll join a board meeting call, you know, I can help you with the board, or I can help you with some fundraising ideas, because, or grant writing, coaching you with grant writing, because no one really does that for you. You know, you have to kind of learn on your own. And so every day is kind of like a new journey of figuring out the next step. The tennis industry has been super supportive, but I would love to partner more with the local autism, you know, foundations and organizations. I feel that everyone's kind of on their own island, you know, surviving and doing their own thing. And, you know, we do provide tennis to these organizations, but oftentimes, you know, we're kind of on our own, which is a challenge, you know, to fundraise.
Sure.
So that's something I wish we could change. Pardon?
Sure. And yeah, and when you mentioned that the island, we're very aware of that. And that's why we do what we do. We try to bring everyone together because just the simple realization, wow, you know, this can benefit my kid. And you know what? I can work with you. It's super important because, you know, we feel kind
super.
Of isolated.
You said our first super.
Super.
No, I think I said it before.
You did?
Okay. That's our word, just in case you didn't know, Lisa. We say super a lot.
A lot? Okay.
Usually more, yeah.
Like my dog is snoring super loud right now.
Super loud. Okay.
But I think Lisa, a little bird told us, are you speaking of fundraising for your own facility, your own super spot?
Super.
Super spot. That's a super, super, super spot. Yes. I have, one day I woke up with a vision, one of my visions, and I said, you know what, being an SLP and being a tennis, you know, professional, I would love to have a facility because we don't have a headquarters. You know, everyone asks, where can we go to your office? I'm like, well, I don't really have an office. My office is going to schools and tennis centers, but it'd be nice to have an office. It'd be nice to have an actual inclusive
to world too.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So you understand. So I have this vision of in South Florida having an inclusive, I'll explain that in a minute, like an inclusive therapeutic tennis facility where children and adults who are both on the spectrum or, you know, neurotypical, you know, typically developing, they could come, they can learn basic developmental tennis skills. So we'd have coaches who would be teaching everyone tennis, just the basics. And then individuals with special needs could come and receive speech, you know, to occupational physical therapies within that facility. Siblings would be involved because it'd be a lot of peer modeling. And I think it'd be so much fun to work on life skills. So it would be sort of like some of the schools are set, you know, some of the schools have all these components within, but we would be focusing on tennis. And also additional sports too. I mean, it'd be kind of fun to do that, but I did kind of start with this process a year ago and found, you know, a few locations in South Florida. But when I found out, you know, in the USTA National was interested in supporting a few projects with ours with like renovating the tennis court surface and designing the tennis courts, and they have grant funding for it. But the overhead costs and, you know, we just haven't been able yet to get there. Super expensive. Mm-hmm. So that is super expensive. That's a big project for us ahead. I would love. I mean, I think it'd be a passion and I could work there full time and that would be my thing, but funding has kind of halted us at the moment. So that is something that I would love to promote more, and I think families would love it. Some of the families from Left Serving Autism I've spoken to about it think it'd be great, you know, to be able to go to a facility and to receive all these services.
But in the interim, you're doing the work. You're in there. You are teaching these kids invaluable skills. And I love when they're having so much fun. They don't know it's therapy. And, you know, Brett and I are all about that. About like the little bait and switch between communication skills, independence skills, the friendships, the bonds, having something to look forward to, getting outside. I mean, there's got to be a million benefits, and we're so thankful for you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm thankful that I'm returned to I think my higher purpose, my bigger purpose, like I questioned as a child, is this. Like, I think I'm finally connected to it. You know, life is, you know, has such a journey, and we don't understand why we go through what we go through. You know, my husband is he's a full-time tennis professional, but he's a big leader in the tennis industry. He does a lot. And I said, why, you know, should I have stayed in tennis? Like, I, you know, there are moments and doubts of like, should I leave? Should I have stayed professionally? Because this is challenging, you know? And he says, well, you know what, you know, obviously obviously this is your purpose because, you know, you wake up every day and you still have a passion for it, even though the funding or you might not get a grant or it's, you know, you have these big foundations around you who do great things and you're still like trying to get going. But, you know, somehow, somehow we're still moving, you know, and I think it's passion that drives that a lot of times, you know. So thank you for encouraging me because I know, yeah. I know the families love it and I want to keep going and I will, you know, continue the journey. Yes. I think, and then Christy, like you said, getting the word out of to families just to try something, you know, like Temple Grandin says, you know, you never know what a child can do until they're exposed to it. And, you never know. Right. So even if they try it, they don't like it, that's fine. They don't have to continue, but usually they have fun. So, right.
Are there any upcoming events you'd like to announce? I know you have an upcoming fall program, maybe at the Veltri.
Is that how it is? Veltri Tennis Center.
Tennis Center in our old stomping grounds, the Plantation.
Right now we're still teaching tennis on Zoom. So any families are welcome to reach out to our website, loveservingautism.org, and reach out to me. And Lisa, and you know, and sign up for Zoom classes just to see kind of what we do. But we are reopening some programs in the next few months. So one will be in Broward at the Frank Veltri Tennis Center, which is in Plantation. That'll be run for 6-week sessions on Saturdays. There are restrictions right now at many of the facilities with the number of students, you know, who could be on a court at once. So we are kind of limited to registration numbers. But that's fine. At least we're excited just to get it going again with the new protocol. As far as, you know, fundraising events, we plan to hopefully do some online fundraising. I did recently, yesterday, connect to, it's called the American Tennis Association, and they promote tennis to African-American families, and they're based in Maryland. And they want to partner with us and do a fun event in October. For Zoom, on Zoom. So that'll be kind of like a fun event where, you know, children who they know can log in and learn more about our program. You know, they have autism from across the U.S. and just learn how to, you know, what tennis is. So we're just focused right now on just getting up and going again, you know, and trying to get our programs back on track.
Well, thank you for offering our kids the full court advantage. That just came to me.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Thank you so much. Today's episode is finished. Yay! Did everyone see my shirt? I mean, come on.
I love it. Oh my gosh. You have this.
She's ready.
You are ready.
Please, please follow Lisa and Love Serving Autism on their inspiring Instagram page. Please visit loveservingautism.org for class registration, upcoming scheduled events. Lisa, it's been a blast volleying with you today.
thank you
and love, love, love what you're doing. In the spirit of Andy Cohen's Watch What Happens Live, we used the word love 986 times in this episode. So please call an Uber if you've been drinking or at least film yourself trying to return a tennis serve.
I'd like to thank both of you too for connecting organizations and families together because I think that's so important, you know, and I appreciate it. So thank you.
You're doing the hard work.
We're just putting the word out there. Don't forget to follow us too, the Sorely Blonde Autism Podcast and all of our social media. Season 3 is all booked up and we cannot wait to show you what we have in store. Time to pick up
the balls.
The colorful ones. Red, green, yellow.
Red, green, yellow.
I was going to say a common, but I'm not.
Yeah.
Let's keep it PG.
Please.
13.
Okay, I'll be good.
Game over.
Bye.
Thank you, guys. Hey.